Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Today we're going to talk to Vanessa Bealey of 21st Century Wire, and she has been to Syria recently. She was there to see the sites where all kinds of media allegations have been made. I know that we trust Vanessa based on all of her great writing, and we want to hear what she has to tell us. Later in the show, we're going to talk to Justin Bahunga. He is a spokesperson for the five parties, the opposition parties, to Paul Kagame in Rwanda. There's been some developments there. There's another Rwandan lawyer has been found dead in his cell, and according to the authorities. So we want to know about that. And Phil Conlon is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
And let's tell the people at the top, they can check us out. Where can they find us? Do you have that information?
Yeah, let me do it.
It's facebook.com/
The Taylor Report.
The Taylor Report. Yeah. And on SoundCloud, Taylor-Report. We are, I believe, joined by Vanessa Bealey. Are you there, Vanessa?
I'm here, Phil.
Well, we're very glad to be talking to you, Vanessa. I know you have just returned quite recently from Syria, and we're very anxious to hear what you saw, who you saw, and what you make of all these headlines. And by the way, you're making the headlines, and I want to congratulate you. You seem to have the most wonderful collection of enemies I've ever seen. I envy you. And it's frankly, it is great in my mind that they are engaging with you because they will lose, in my opinion. And if we could get a debate, that would be wonderful. So when were you there? Tell us about your impressions now of from your visit, if you would.
Well, I was there for about, in total, 5 weeks. I just got back 4 days ago now. It was quite a roller coaster. I mean, I was there during the tripartite criminal aggression against Syria, which actually had, as we discussed, very little effect upon the Syrian morale, let's say. Mm-hmm. I was there during the final moments of liberation of Eastern Ghouta and of Douma. So I shared some of the disappointment and elation when some of the kidnapped victims were released after the finalization of negotiations with the Jaish al-Islam Saudi-financed terrorist groups that were controlling Douma. And the first bus left. I was actually there when the first bus left, carrying around 40 of the released kidnapped victims. But sadly, we still don't know exactly what happened, but it was believed that Jaish al-Islam had provided false intelligence that there were a far greater number of the kidnapped victims that had been held below ground in the repentance prisons, as they were called, left alive. They were far less actually left alive than they had told the Syrian government and the intelligence services. So in reality, I think so far only around 200 have left Douma alive. The remaining bodies or kidnapped victims have not yet, as far as I know, been found. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple of mass graves discovered. And I think, unfortunately, as time passes and as the Syrian army is able to get in and actually ascertain what happened in these prisons, there is footage now being shown of at least one of the repentance prisons, which, to be honest, looked like a pretty hideous place for these people to have been held. Many of them since 2013, of course, when they were kidnapped from an area called Adra, which is to the north of Eastern Ghouta. And there, of course, when the terrorist factions entered and massacred many of the civilians there, we know that some were actually burned alive in the bread ovens in Adra. Others, mostly women and children, were kidnapped and were taken to the underground prisons in Douma. So Douma is, you know, along with the chemical weapon attack, it's still really an ongoing situation there. Under the Russian negotiations, actually former militants are now providing security for the area. Many of the people in Duma decided to stay. So ex-militants who've taken Amnesty and Reconciliation are those who are providing security in Duma under the guarantor or the guaranteeship of the Russian military police. So it's a complex situation in Duma even now.
By the way, I hope that story gets told. As you point out, this matter of the disengaging and removal of organized terrorists with a lot of capital and a lot of dangerous hardware, that is a chapter I think that's not quite understood and appreciated. Here we are continually bombarded with the term brutal regime, et cetera. And yet I always see these buses lining up to pick up these elements who have been practicing sectarian violence, racial violence, totally ruthless people. But in order to bring peace, they put aboard a bus and they go away. It's a remarkable situation. By the way, we're speaking to Vanessa Beely, 21st Century Wire. She has a Twitter account, and I check that every day three or four times. And so I know that's the place to go for information. And you did have some really dramatic footage. You were right there as people came across from East Ghouta. You emphasize, I know, in your talks and elsewhere, we're only just now hearing the Syrian voices of the people who've been living under the terrorist regime.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this is an extraordinary factor that is just, as you said, it's completely downplayed, particularly by corporate media in the West. One is the Amnesty and Reconciliation agreements and the negotiations that are ongoing between the Syrian government, the Russian reconciliation centers, and the terrorist factions, I mean, throughout Eastern Ghouta. So negotiations were ongoing throughout the military campaign. And this is something that is really misunderstood in the West. If it is spoken about, it's spoken about as a form of ethnic cleansing, as a form of the removal of the so-called rebel factions from their homes to other less desirable areas of Syria. Nothing could actually be further from the truth. I mean, 63,000, I believe, were the figures that were put out 2 days ago of civilians that have returned to areas of Eastern Ghouta that have been made safe by the Syrian army and by the Russian sappers who have removed all number of mines and booby traps that would have been left behind by the departing terrorist factions. Many of whom, by the way, again, something that is not being publicized at all. I was in an area called Samalka, which is close to Kafra Batna and to Hamouria. All of those were areas involved in the alleged chemical weapon attacks of August 2013 that have been largely deemed to have been carried out, if they were carried out, by the terrorist factions who had access to chemical weapons. But the testimony that I heard from people in those areas was that very early on in the occupation by the terrorist factions and in those areas, the predominant force was then probably Nusra Front. Very early on, residents were pushed out of their apartment blocks and were replaced by foreign fighters coming in and swelling the ranks of Nusra Front. Now, when those fighters left on the green buses and were evacuated to Idlib, I was told by officials who had paperwork to prove it that 280 British passports holders were among those Nusra Front fighters that left from those areas to Idlib. And as they said to me, nobody can guarantee that they are not going to pass through Idlib into Turkey and then into Europe and back to Britain.
Yes.
This is the very important point that is overlooked by the British public, who are basically their taxes are going into financing of these terrorist, or as they're called euphemistically, opposition groups inside Syria. Yes. And now we're seeing the blowback in motion. We're seeing 280 minimum British passport holders on their way back potentially to Britain.
Yes, and Vanessa, I have to ask you on that point, if there were actually a coordinated international effort to defeat terrorism, particularly in the names of these organizations, that there is international consensus, they are terrorists. So why isn't the British government in touch with the Syrian government saying, could you please give us the identification of these people and please don't let them go anywhere? And indeed, why don't you hold them for us? Because they're a threat to us.
Well, I think that's making a very big assumption that the British government was not aware that they went there in the first place.
I was being charitable, but...
So, you know, I think that that's imbuing my government with way too much morality.
But it does expose what they're actually doing, right? I mean, because that would be their duty.
Yes, absolutely. But, I mean, it would also be the duty of the French, British and U.S. occupation forces that are illegally inside Syria, who are making the claim that they are there to stop the reemergence of Islamic State. And yet they're not collaborating with the Syrian government and its allies, who are currently battling ISIS to the south of Damascus, of course, as they're in the process of liberating the Yarmouk Palestinian suburbs and the surrounding areas from what has been effectively an ISIS occupation for the last few years since Nusra left about a year ago. So there is no, you know, we're seeing even a clearer example of there being absolutely no collaboration with the Syrian government that is genuinely fighting terrorism in its own country, defending its country.
It's a sovereign country and a founding member of the United Nations.
Absolutely, exactly. And, you know, the United States is occupying over 30% of that, of its territory, with a number of proxies, including the power multiplied Kurdish separatist factions, which are a pretty small percentage of the fighting force, which is being increased by, we're told, ex-ISIS fighters and a number of ex-terrorist fighters that are being brought under the sort of the umbrella of the SDF. And, of course, they've taken control of some of the most productive oil fields in that area, unsurprisingly. And the French forces are now crossing, I believe, from the Iraqi border into the northeast, although I did hear yesterday that they'd actually been pushed out of the area they'd come into by local tribal militia that are loyal to the Damascus government, and they'd been pushed further to the east towards the United States Al-Tanf base, I believe.
By the way, I found that at 21st Century Wire and no place else. Thank you very much for that work. And even these reports, because the portrayal is of a government that, of course, is isolated and alienated. In fact, there seems to be a wide display of patriotism in the country.
Yeah, and I think what was surprising, Phil, I watched civilians leaving Eastern Ghouta via the humanitarian corridors that, again, had been set up by the Syrian government and its Russian allies on the ground working on reconciliation. Now, those corridors, I saw for myself how dangerous they were, because as the civilians were leaving along those corridors, they were coming under fire and shelling from the terrorist factions who didn't want them to leave. And actually, I was told some pretty horrific stories of babies being shot, children being killed as they were trying to leave. And as these people came into the first step of their liberation, let's say, so into the Wafadin camp, I saw people that were visibly drained, exhausted, traumatized, and actually in some ways quite hostile. I don't think they knew what to expect when they entered the Syrian government areas, because, again, very similar to East Aleppo, they'd been told that if they were to leave, they would be massacred by the Syrian government, they would be killed by the Shia Muslim militias, etc. So the same brainwashing had gone on for 5 years in Eastern Ghouta, as it had done in East Aleppo. Yes. And so there was a degree of distrust. But when I came back to the actual IDP center itself in Harjale, about 2 weeks after I'd seen people leave via the humanitarian corridors, I was honestly astounded. I saw the same people having completely lost their wariness and their hostility. I saw children back in a very well-organized school complex made up of a circle of porter cabins, probably over 100 of them, mm-hmm. With children back at school, really enthusiastic about being back in a sort of secular education.
Yes.
I saw kitchens that were providing food for, I think in that camp alone, 20,000 people. I saw them receiving cleaning materials, etc. The houses that they were being offered were like small barracks, but were very comfortable, very clean. And I was told that basically as soon as they were able, they would be allowed to go back to Douma and to reintegrate, etc. Mm-hmm. So the process is not to keep them, you know, in these temporary housing. The idea is to make it safe for them to be able to return home and then for the government to support them in that reintegration process.
And, by the way, isn't that must be, and certainly for my morale, it is good to just to think of that. You know, a year ago, I think we spoke with you about East Aleppo. East Aleppo, mm. Now I'm seeing pictures. The churches are once again being attended. The society is, the schools are working. The people, the streets are clean. It's amazing.
And I think, you know, there are certain areas in Eastern Ghouta, like, for example, Sakba, Douma itself, actually, where the alleged chemical weapon attack took place, where people have actually, that part of the reconciliation deal is that they wanted to stay in the area. So that has been allowed. They haven't been pushed out. They've been allowed to stay there and to rebuild immediately. And in Sakba in particular, in almost every street we were in, we could see, you know, exactly the same as in East Aleppo, people starting to already clean out their houses from the rubble, to start rebuilding, to start welding, to start opening shops up again. Even in Douma, 700 meters from this supposed chemical weapon attack, we saw marketplaces being set up. We saw vegetables and fruit being sold in abundance, actually. And everyone we spoke to said, you know, this is extraordinary, because under the terrorist occupation, many of them, I spoke to one woman who had actually left Douma, and she said for the month prior to the full liberation, she and her children and a number of other families were kept underground in the tunnels by the terrorist groups and were not given any water or food. Mm-hmm. So she said actually the last month before they were released from these underground prisons, basically, they were in a pretty bad state. Food that was available to them was being sold at extortionate prices, just as it was in every other area of Syria that was under occupation.
So that is liberation. They're thieves, yeah, and brutes. This is Vanessa Bealey, 21st Century Wire, and also Twitter. I urge you to go to those sites. But Vanessa, I had the... I want to try a thought on you. Whenever I'm following the fighting, trying to understand the progress of the Syrian army and what they're faced with, a story like Douma, I thought, okay, they're about a day or two away, and next guess is that we'll be seeing buses. But then all of a sudden, oh, it's chemical weapons. Suddenly they've dropped them on these poor people of Douma. And white helmets are all over the news. And to me, it was like they're trying to cover a defeat. They're trying to cover a retreat. Suddenly we're talking about something entirely different, which is entirely, actually, as far as I can tell, made up. What's your thought? Hello? Gee, I gave a long speech and I don't blame Vanessa if she hung up, but I don't think she did. She might be there. We'll try to get her back. Phil, do you read Vanessa Bealey? 21st Century Wire?
I do see it, yes.
You see that?
Along with Ava Bartlett's stuff. They're the only journalists writing from Syria that are worth reading.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they have, as I mentioned to her at the top, they have the right enemies.
Absolutely. But you know, the interesting thing about them, of course, is when they report on Syria, they report from Syria, which is not true of all the mainstream press.
They're condemned for that.
Yes.
And I probably should ask her if we are able to recover her the connection with her. Do we need to take a break to do it? Oh, we need to take a break to do that. So we'll do that with a little music. We'll be back, we hope, with Vanessa.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
We're back. Taylor Report. It was great to have Vanessa Bealey, and we apologize. The connections like that often go awry, but she gave us a lot of information. We'll probably be talking to her more. I want to remind you, she is with 21st Century Wire, so... And they did produce a program on Sunday night of 2 hours, actually, a discussion of all these matters. She touched on some of them with us. I wanted to just say, too, that we will be asking her more about the phenomenon of the white helmets, which was what we were introducing at the break. The white helmets are, very curiously... the sole source of all these allegations. At least they get the ball rolling. And then you have someone like the Prime Minister of Britain saying, we have these open source things. But Phil, do you know what an open source is?
No. What is an open source?
Yeah, I wish I knew, too. It's what Prime Minister May relies upon for her in order to make a decision whether to attack another state and put England in a state of war with a sovereign member of the United Nations and violate international law. In the short, that's what that is. It's really, and of course, the photographs that were referred to that got everyone excited were of these children being washed down with hoses. And people screaming that, you know, it's been a chemical attack. Now, because the Syrian army was moving so quickly, they actually captured the place at which this was done. And in those photographs, you see two or three individuals who are identified and who have made themselves available to international authorities willing to testify. And you know, if a lawyer was saying, is that you in the picture? Yes, that's me. What was going on? And there were two medical professionals who said there was no chemicals. We were treating people for dust inhalation. And these people came into the clinic and began screaming chemical weapons and pouring water over people. That's evidence. That's testimony. It's direct. Is that you in the picture? That's me. And there was no chemical attack. That's heavy stuff, because we remember that something like 100, maybe 70 missiles were fired, Tomahawk missiles, and destroyed buildings and put people at risk in the country at that time. So it shows why you need the organizations like 21st Century Wire, who had somebody on the scene, helped us understand that. So that was Vanessa Bealey. We'll come back with that